Support for Tested comes from Duke Health, reminding listeners that COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and can protect individuals and others from the virus. Together, communities can end this pandemic. Find sites for a free vaccine at DukeHealth.org.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Will Michaels. It's primary election day in North Carolina, and you might be forgiven if you feel like it crept up on you. This year's primaries were supposed to be in March, but a group of voters challenged the latest round of redistricting in court, arguing Republicans gave themselves an illegal partisan advantage. Now the new maps are in place and the elections are set. They just need candidates. My colleagues Jeff Tiberi and Rusty Jacobs have picked apart these races just like they do before every election day. But this year, the primaries could have more of an impact than they usually do on November's midterms. With the fact in mind that these elections are happening 2 months after they were originally supposed to, how much of an impact do you think that might have on total turnout?
Turnout seems to be pretty robust already, and perhaps in terms of impact on voters, it's given them time to figure out what districts they're in. Redistricting may have confused matters for some people. It's also given steam to the issues. You've got a U.S. Senate race on the GOP side in particular, especially between Ted Budd, the congressman who's endorsed by Donald Trump, and Pat McCrory, may be representing something more of a mainstream challenge to the Trump endorsee. That's going to draw out people on the GOP side. On the Democratic side, really, you've got a Democratic intra-party squabble like you have anywhere else. The Democratic Party trying to identify itself by which nominees are selected. Maybe somebody from the more progressive side in some races or somebody from a more mainstream side.
Will, you asked about a primary 2 months ago, and I can only wonder how much Madison Cawthorn would have liked a primary 2 months ago, right? Like, the last 2 months have just been really a disaster for him from a public relations standpoint. He's in something of the political fight of his life, so that's an interesting one up in the mountains. But in terms of turnout, early voting has more than doubled what it was 4 years ago during the last midterm. No U.S. Senate race in that election, but early voting is way up. I think we're going to approach 20% turnout. Recent history, modern primary history in North Carolina, the record is 21% set 20 years ago. So turnout looks strong based on what we've seen here in early voting.
One more thing, Will, I'll say too, is even though it is a midterm election, Donald Trump is very present in this election. He is picking candidates left and right. He's trying to play a role in the GOP Senate primary right here in North Carolina. So with his presence alone, it's drawing a lot more attention than a typical midterm election.
Let me just go ahead and jump off of that since we're already there. Former President Trump, how much of an impact do you think that he will have on these primaries? I suppose the answer to that could be, let's wait and see how the candidates that he endorsed do tonight. But what do you think?
So I think that as we look across the country, there have been some mixed results here in 2022 thus far. So the verdict is still out, and this is not a question that's going to go away after Tuesday night, just to be clear. We're going to be talking about who former President Donald Trump is supporting in November and come 2024 in the primary and then in the general, presuming he still has some capacity to be doing endorsements.
Not to be too flippant about this, but I was glancing at my watch to see how long it would take us to mention Madison Cawthorn, and now we've talked about him twice. So let's talk about Madison Cawthorn. Will one of you remind us of his recent troubles and how he's been responding to them?
There's been so much, truthfully, and I don't mean to be snarky about it, but we have the borderline criminal taking a loaded gun into an airport in Charlotte. We have alleged inappropriate financial disclosures, inappropriate financial transactions as it pertains to some cryptocurrency. We have weird and uncomfortable videos that might border on pornographic, if not just intensely personal. There's all sorts of stuff.
Don't forget the driving citations.
Right. He's been cited twice for driving recklessly. I guess I would point out a couple of things that are important for context. One, this is still a staunchly Republican district. It is the whitest congressional district in the state. He still has a decent amount of support up there. Exactly how much we can't tell, because polling in primaries is notoriously difficult to flesh out. The threshold for him to get through Tuesday is to finish first with more than 30% of the vote. There's a chance. I don't want to say good or bad or whatever. There's a chance he does that. Will he get 50% of the vote? I would bet a large sum of money he does not. That would shock me. But he could get 32 or 33% of the vote and emerge as the nominee for the general election.
Will, moral distaste expressed through the press for candidates that are supported, endorsed by Donald Trump, don't always seem to make a difference to people who support those candidates. In fact, maybe the more the media seems arrayed against him or the headlines seem arrayed against him, maybe the more likely it is people who have supported him will support him even more ardently. But I'll say this too, he may have made some political miscalculations or missteps before we even got into this current race. You got to remember, before redistricting resulted in new maps, he had decided he was going to try to move to a new district closer to Charlotte, big media market, got the current House Speaker, Tim Moore, to bow out of even running for that race, which included his home county. He's now back in the 11th district, but I'm sure there are some voters there on the Republican side who see him as maybe a little too opportunistic. So we'll see how that may affect his outcome in this primary.
And let us not forget that just days into his term on Capitol Hill, he participated in an attempt to overthrow the American government. So there's that, too.
Thanks for that reminder, Jeff. Absolutely.
Just should not in case anybody forgot.
Cannot gloss over that.
So Republican congressman from Western North Carolina, and I don't think we even mentioned his comments that he has since sort of walked back about President Zelensky of Ukraine.
Oh, sure. The thug comment. I actually thought you were going to say we hadn't mentioned yet his comments on kind of an obscure podcast about how there are cocaine-filled orgies in Washington, D.C., because we hadn't mentioned that either. But to your point, no, we had not mentioned the fact that he called President Volodymyr Zelensky a thug a couple months earlier. Rusty, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, he got pulled into the principal's office over those claims, right? The minority leader, McCarthy, brought him in, kind of dressed him down for that. And I do want to go back, Jeff, to the important point you made about his role in that rally on January 6th, 2021, prior to the an insurrection at the Capitol. He was the target of an effort to have his candidacy challenged based on his alleged violation of a constitutional provision that was drafted after the Civil War and meant to keep former Confederates from going back to Congress. Now, he sued in federal court to get that challenge put aside, but there are still legal efforts underway to try to block him from even going back to Congress on the basis of a constitutional violation.
We have already talked about this a little bit, but let's talk a little bit more about the U.S. Senate race, because this race will fill the seats that Senator Richard Burr is leaving after decades in office, right?
So Richard Burr is a three-term U.S. senator, and he was a five-term member of the U.S. House before that. So I believe, if I'm doing my math correctly, we're looking at a 28-year career on Capitol Hill. Anytime an incumbent of that long leaves, you're losing institutional knowledge, you're potentially losing some important committeeships. This is an open race for the U.S. Senate. We expect it to be one of the most expensive races this year across the country as we think about U.S. Senate contests, and one of the most expensive U.S. Senate races ever. On the Democratic side, Sherry Beasley, former Chief Justice of the North Carolina State Supreme Court, is the presumptive nominee. There are 11 other Democratic challengers, but none of them have really raised much money or expected to garner much of the vote here. On the Republican side, there's Mark Walker, former congressman. There's Pat McCrory, former Republican governor, one-term governor. And there's Ted Budd, the Republican congressman from part of the Triad area. And we talked a little bit about the power of Trump here and the power of Trump's endorsement. McCrory was ostensibly leading this race to the extent you can lead a race a year before a primary in 2021. And then, to the surprise of almost everybody, on a campaign stage or on a rally stage last summer, President Trump offered his endorsement for Ted Budd. And what happened after that was ostensibly like an X in the polls, where McCrory sank and Budd rose. And my operating assumption is that either Budd or McCrory will get above 30% and move on from a runoff. If this is indeed another defeat for Pat McCrory, it may mark the end of his political career. Ted Budd has also been propped up by a lot of money for the Club from Growth, which is a super conservative, super PAC, like north of $15 million.
So because we brought up former President Trump again, I'm very much into segues at the moment. Let's talk about the fact that this is the first nationwide election, right, since the big lie in 2020, which former President Trump perpetuated, that the 2020 election was stolen and that there was widespread fraud. There is no evidence of that. Rusty, you did some reporting on the trust or mistrust in the voting system that is left over from 2020 and the effects that that has had, whether or not there is evidence, and again, there isn't, of voting fraud. Remind us of your reporting, what kind of impact it had.
The public mistrust persists, certainly among people on the right. To all the election administrators and poll workers I spoke to, 2020 had ample reasons to celebrate. It was a pandemic. Turnout turned out to be historic. More than 75% of voters, registered voters in North Carolina, turned out to participate in the 2020 election. Record amounts of absentee ballots by mail were processed successfully. There was a Supreme Court Chief Justice race that came down to a recount, hand count, and it was all done thoroughly, adequately, by the law. And still, what elections administrators woke up to back in 2020 were protests about the fraud that had taken place, which was not true. To a person I spoke to for my reporting, elections administrators are undeterred. And you got to remember, they don't write the law. They enforce it, they apply it, and that's how they oversee elections in North Carolina. Nonetheless, they are the targets of the ire of people who subscribe to these baseless lies. And I'll say this, you know, I was talking to the county elections director in Buncombe County, Corrine Duncan, and she spins it as positively as anybody. And she says, look, the positive from the increased public scrutiny and interest in elections from 2020 is that it is an opportunity to inform people properly about the process. You can go to county boards elections starting 5 weeks before primary election day, 5 weeks before general election day. County boards start meeting weekly to process absentee ballots. That's all open to the public. So the process is an open book process. And that's really the only way. If people are curious or skeptical about the process, that's the way to dispel your skepticism, to actually see it for yourself.
And only briefly, I would say all this to me, maybe 10,000 foot view, is something of a self-fulfilling prophecy. It is a result, it's a fix, or it's something in search of a problem that doesn't exist. And I'm reminded a little bit of that adage that we probably all heard in school, which is, there's no such thing as a bad question. Yes, there is. I disagree with that. If you ask over and over again why there's a horn growing out of my head, eventually people are going to think there is a horn growing out of his head, right? There's not a horn growing out of my head. There aren't issues with widespread election fraud in this country, but that seed has been planted and it is growing, and it is extremely dangerous as to how that might play out this year or in 24 or 26. We don't know, but the seed has been, this unnecessary poisonous seed potentially has been planted, and that's very, very concerning.
And that, Jeff, reminds me of a conversation I had with Senator Paul Newton, a leading Republican in the state Senate here in North Carolina who backed a bill that would have eliminated what the state has had for a while, a three-day grace period for accepting and counting properly postmarked mail-in ballots. That is, ballots that were postmarked by Election Day. And to my questions, he said, look, this is just a way we can address skepticism or questions the public have about election security. But I kept asking him, but what are those questions rooted in? Is there truly an issue? Isn't it your responsibility to say, folks, there really isn't an issue with election security and election integrity? But if you keep saying, look, we just want to address these questions by presenting bills that do away with the grace period, you're not really addressing whether or not the skepticism is rooted in mis or disinformation.
As I often like to do, I want to draw a line between election fraud and voter fraud. Election fraud is systemic, right? It's what we saw in North Carolina's 9th congressional district 4 years ago. It's what led to a redo in that election. It is exceedingly rare in this country. Voter fraud happens on occasion. It's a one-off. It happens across the country, but it's a few examples out of tens of millions of ballots. And I think it's worth noting that the most notable example of what we believe is voter fraud in North Carolina was former congressman, former chief of staff to President Donald Trump, Mark Meadows, who registered to vote in North Carolina at a residence, an address that he owned but never occupied, never lived at, and based on reporting from The New Yorker and The Washington Post, might never have spent a night at. So, again, do with that what you will.
So bringing this marathon home and switching back to tonight, understanding that a lot of these races are probably going to be decided after tonight because they are either safe Democratic or safe Republican seats. How many of these races will actually be competitive? What are you watching?
I'll be watching on the Democratic side, the 4th congressional district. This is the district that David Price has served. Except for a two-year break from 94 to 96 after he lost his seat in the Gingrich-era Republican Revolution, David Price has been serving this area, including Chapel Hill, Durham, from 1987 until now. And he is retiring at the end of this term. There are a number of Democrats running, but at the top of the ballot are Valerie Fouché, state senator, Durham County Commissioner Nita Alam, and then there's Clay Aiken of American Idol fame. But the two top contenders really seem to be Nita Alam and Valerie Fouché. And they're both trailblazers. Valerie Fouché was the first African-American woman elected to the Orange County Commissioner. She served on the local school board in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. She was in the state house, then got appointed to fill out a term for Ellie Kinnaird in the state Senate and has since been reelected. She's got a long history of public service. Nita Alam, first Muslim elected to office in North Carolina, now serving the Durham County on the Board of Commissioners. And she was worked for the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign in 2016. She's got a bunch of endorsements from progressives like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's seen as a possible member of the squad, the progressives. Fouché kind of lost some support among progressives because she's gotten a lot of backing and outside money, significant money, which seems to have really helped her campaign from, among other groups, pro-Israel PACs associated with AIPAC. And they've given her campaign a lot of money.
So I guess real quick, what am I watching tonight? Congressional races, the first and the fourth, where we have retiring members of Congress, G.K. Butterfield in the first, David Price in the fourth, then the 13th and the 14th. The 13th is probably the only congressional seat that will be tight on election night in November. It's an open seat there. I'm not even going to name names because somebody will get mad because I didn't name theirs, but there are a gaggle of candidates there. There's a lot of outside money coming in. The 14th is also an open seat with a state senator, Jeff Jackson, seen as the presumptive favorite. And then the 11th, what happens with Madison Cawthorn. And the other, I guess, blanket statement I'll make about all this is that any race where the first place finisher does not finish with at least 30% of the vote, he or she will face off with the second place finisher on July 26th in a second primary, and that is going to have probably real lousy turnout. But That's another big thing I'm watching for. What isn't decided tonight?
Jeff Tiberi and Rusty Jacobs are the political reporting team at WUNC, and all three of us will be watching and analyzing the primaries. You can listen live tonight or catch up with us at WUNC.org. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Will Michaels. Thanks for listening.